Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware. Good afternoon and welcome to The Aware Show. I am the Cigar, and it's a true privilege to be here today just because we get the opportunity to spend this hour as an oasis of empowering transformational information. That's the whole point of The Aware Show, is messages that inspire your positive growth and change. So thank you so much for joining me. Now, many people these days are not only in their day jobs, but also creating side jobs. There's a whole conversation we've had around a side hustle, or that's what it's technically called. But we choose to call it maybe your true passion, because that's what we usually create. Is look at our lives these days. We've got multiple jobs. Usually someone has at least one to two jobs, if not the second job is a passion. In retirement, there is kind of no such thing any longer. The retirement ages have blurred slightly, where you can retire, but yet you still have time to do your passion or find something that means something to you in life. But a lot of that is based on decisions. Where do you go? Where is the point in your life where you truly make that turn? You choose what it is that you really want to do for your life. And that's kind of what startups are based on, I believe. I haven't created a startup yet, but I have some great ideas. But it's an idea that takes on a great amount of momentum, and a lot of people get underneath it, and it attracts people and so forth. My guest today, Rizwan Virk is his name, and people call him Riz for short, is an entrepreneur, an investor in startups. He is a video game industry pioneer and an independent film producer. Talk about somebody who has had multiple incarnations in the same lifetime, which is great. Because I think he understands the quantum physics behind it all, and the deep meaning that has to lie underneath why we do what we do. So he has many, many startups that he's created, maybe some games you might know of, including Tapfish, Bingo Run, Penny Dreadful, a lot of great things. Cards of Fate, a lot of good things. So welcome to the show, and thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Great to have you here. Did I butcher some of those game names?
The end one? No, I think that was fine. Penny Dreadful was based on a TV show on Showtime.
How do you help people with, I'm just going to talk about that for a second, startups. I mean, that is what you've helped people have spoken about, taught about, and so forth. Why startups?
Well, so I've been doing startups pretty much for the last 20 years in one fashion or another. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I believe starting a business is as much an act of creativity and personal expression, you know, as it is an act of professionalism. So, of course, they're the kind of the how to do X side of a startup. You know, how do you incorporate the business? How do you get investors to invest in you? Product market fit. There's all of those things. But, you know, what I find most interesting are the motivations of the people who are building a startup and dedicating their life to following their dream.
The stories.
Yeah, the stories. And why are they doing what they're doing? Why do they feel called and compelled, you know, to spend so much time and energy to try to create something new, you know, and bring it out to the world? That's what I've been doing initially myself as an entrepreneur. I've started a few different companies.
Now, tell me what you just – like high level here. What creates success in a startup, and what causes the failure?
Well, you know, there's a – I think that there's a lot of different paths to success. And sometimes people say, well, can you tell me, you know, if I do X, Y, and Z, that my startup will be successful? And, you know, the answer is not really, because to be successful in a startup, which is a very difficult thing, you have to really dig deep inside yourself and do what I call following the clues, because every journey is different. And I like to use the metaphor of an Indiana Jones film. Mm-hmm. And you may have seen Raiders of the Lost Ark or one of the other films. And in those films, it would be nice if Indiana Jones had a map all laid out in front of him and he could just say, oh, there it is. That's where the Ark of the Covenant
right.
is. I'll just go and get it. Right?
But that's not fun.
Right. So first of all, it doesn't make for a very interesting movie.
Yeah.
But secondly, the way it usually works is that he sees one clue and he has to follow that clue. And where does that lead? That leads to the next clue. You know, which then leads to the next clue. And that's kind of how, you know, this process of creating something new and having it be successful in the world is really all about. And those clues come in the form of intuition, synchronicity, hunches. I've even had ideas for products in dreams, you know, which sometimes I've ignored but then have later gone on to create a startup based
wow.
off of those ideas. And so collectively I call all of these things clues on your personal treasure hunt. And so it's the treasure map could be the map of the startup, or it could be the map of your life or your career, and where the treasure, you know, could be financial success, but in many cases the treasure really is what, you know, you were here to do. You know, what are your strengths and your weaknesses, and what are the things that perhaps even before this life started you were meant to do, and perhaps you're on track or perhaps you're not on track,
mm-hmm.
and you can use the clues as a way to get you back on track.
It's interesting because in order to start something, it takes a lot of inertia, takes a lot of people to agree, and takes project management, but team building as well, motivation, takes so many things that I mean, it requires a lot of time and so forth. But there's not anyone that really maps that out for you ahead of time. It's usually ambition or it's motivation that's driving you. But nobody tells you it's going to take this much time and this many dollars and you're going to need this amount of people and so forth. It takes a special person to do this.
Yeah, it does. And perhaps it's a good thing that you don't always know up front how
yeah.
difficult it's going to be, just
yeah.
like in Indiana Jones film.
Okay.
If I knew how difficult it was going to be, perhaps we wouldn't have gone on the adventure.
Yeah.
But it's important to follow the calling to get you, you know, on that track, I think. You know?
So your book, Treasure Hunt, is all about that. It's all about laying out the clue life cycle. Tell me what that is.
Sure, yeah. So the book, Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success, is about the way that the universe is speaking to each of us uniquely to guide us on our path. And as I said earlier, we may be on track, we may be off track based upon what we're doing. And so, you know, it's all about following your own intuition. And, you know, this intuition could be coming from a spiritual source or, you know, I'm an engineer and I like to look at how things work. And so I like to look at the quantum physics and say that, you know, as you look into the quantum physics, you realize that time as we know it doesn't really exist and that there are probable future realities and each of those realities is sending us information. So the question is, which of those probable future realities are we going to navigate towards? And so that's, you know, part of the process of following the clues.
Is that where the phrase "see things the way you want them to be" comes from?
Yeah, I think that's very much you know, tied to that. I mean, I take a slightly different take on manifestation than perhaps some might. Some might say, okay, visualize what you want and create it. Now, that's one way to think about it. But as you look at the quantum physics and you really get into, you know, how this might work, you see that the present and the future and the past are all sending information back and forth. There's a physicist named Fred Allen Wolf who writes that the mind is like a time machine able to sense the flow of information from the future and from the past, coinciding into the present. So, you know, there's different ways to manifest, but one of them, and you know, many people find they're trying to create something, sometimes it happens and sometimes it doesn't. And, you know, what's the difference? And my take on it is that when you're successfully creating something, what you're actually doing is finding that probable future where you've already created that thing that you're trying to create, or you've written that book, or you've started that company, or you've become.
Does it actually exist?
Well, that's, you know, as you get into the quantum physics, the idea is that every time we make a choice, we actually create multiple parallel universes. And if you follow that through, every time those parallel universes make a choice, we get multiple parallel universes. And so the idea is that all of these universes out there, there are different probable realities with different probabilities. And that's actually kind of a key point, is that the probabilities are different for different people. And that depends on, you know, what our strengths are and what we were called to do. And I always ask people to go back to the things that you see – you find yourself drawn to, you know, again and again. And that's – those are the things that you were really meant to do that are really part of your treasure map. Other things are often a distraction.
So the life that we're living right now is a result of a universe, a parallel universe that we created, right?
One of many potentially, yeah.
One of many. But yeah, we're living this one.
That's right. Yeah.
There's a simultaneous one going on as well?
Yeah. So if you think back, let's look at this idea of branching into different universes. Now, you might make some small inconsequential decisions like, should I have oatmeal or eggs for breakfast? And I was meditating on this, and you can think of that as like a point that moves in two branches one way. But those worlds probably merge together on this timeline because that's not a big decision. On the other hand, you know, I might make a decision to move to California or to stay in Boston, or someone might make a decision to marry someone or not marry someone. Those are big consequential decisions. And I believe we can sense these other versions of ourselves, perhaps doing other things that are familiar to us but not exactly what we're doing. So, you know, in this life I've become an entrepreneur. I make video games and films. It's, you know, a little creative, but, you know, once I was driving by Stanford University out near where I live, and I got this vision and I sensed, you know, a parallel me that was – more of a professor. It was an academic who was teaching courses on computer science or physics or some mathematical subjects. And I see those tendencies in myself, but that's a different set of choices than I made in this life. So I see that as another potential version of me. And each of us has these, I think. And we can draw strength from those. And so this gets to the heart
of potential versions of you.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this gets to the heart of what is synchronicity. You know, what are these hunches and these feelings of deja vu that we have when we go somewhere? And there's a lot of different explanations. Of course, you know, Jung defined the term as a meaningful coincidence where there's no causal connection. But they could be future selves that are sending us information saying, you know, navigate this way.
Past lives.
Or past lives where it's an actual deja vu of a place you might have been. Or it could be a parallel you and you're sensing that there's another you that in this other parallel universe is doing this thing that you may or may not want to pursue in this life. So that's, you know, as you look at the physics, that's one set of explanations for where these clues might come from.
I had this, I've talked to my listeners about this accident that I had several years ago, and I had this experience within this brain trauma that I had that everything was one, of course, you know, seamlessly, boundlessly, no boundaries. Hmm. Everything was connected.
Yeah.
Did I create it? Did I see it?
Well, you know, I think both of those are correct ways of interpretation. I mean, in my own career, I've had many times when I've had a hunch or a funny feeling about mm-hmm. something, and then later, you know, it could be as simple as I walk by a building, and
right.
you know, I have this little funny feeling in the side of my head that there's something about this building, but I don't know what it is. And then several years later, I start a company in that building, or I sell a company in that building. So that's a simple example. In your case, you know, you saw this potential future, which then actually came true. And I think the future bleeds into the present, and the present bleeds into the past in interesting ways. I had an experience which really caused me to start questioning our common sense ideas about the present will create the future and the past create the present. In my very first startup, I remember I had a situation where I had a dream about a competitor of ours. And I thought that was odd, because I haven't thought about this competitor in many years. It was unusual, and I didn't even know what the competitor was up to. I didn't know what happened to them. But you know, the first rule of treasure hunting in the book is it unusual? And the second rule of treasure hunting is, does it repeat in some ways?
Mm-hmm.
And to define a clue has to have an internal event and an external event that somehow are related to each other.
Okay.
And so in this case, I had an internal event, which was thinking about this guy named Mark and his company. I went into the office that day, and a couple hours later after I'd woken up, and I got a call from IBM, which was the big 800-pound gorilla in our space. And the guy from IBM said, well, I just needed to tell you we're releasing news of this product today. It's going to crush one of your products. But I just kind of wanted you to know as a heads up that we didn't, you know.
Wow.
And I said, well, of course I was upset that their product was going to crush ours. But then I said, well, how come I've never heard of this product? Like, how did you keep it a secret? I mean, that's not a small company.
Uh-huh.
And he said, oh, well, we bought that competitor, you know, Mark from Edge. And I thought about it and I said, that's interesting. Now, did the dream happen that morning because I was going to get the phone call? Did the phone call happen because I had the dream? And the more you look into it, the more you realize both of those are valid interpretations. I call it glitches in the quantum matrix, where some situations from the future make their way into our minds, and our conscious mind is the one that can perceive this information coming from the future or from the past or from parallel lives.
Future, past, or parallel lives. Now, the environment in Silicon Valley, you said it's very small. It doesn't appear to be small, though. But it is a very small, kind of essentially small group of decision makers.
Well, so, yeah. I mean, Silicon Valley is a couple of different areas. There's Silicon Valley and Palo Alto, and then there's San Francisco. And so there are lots and lots of tech companies. So it is a fairly big area. So I split my time between Silicon Valley and Boston. And Boston is a smaller community in terms of the tech world.
But it changes fast. I'm asking you if this is a reason. Going somewhere with this. So – because of the nature of it, and it changes so fast, have you been forced to rely on your intuition?
Yeah. So not only have I, but I've noticed that most successful people in Silicon Valley, as they pursue a business idea or even investors, they rely very much on their gut, their gut feelings, their intuition, their hunches. But they don't use the same terminology that a lot of people in the spiritual world use. They might say, oh, I use pattern matching because I saw, you know, this other company do something similar. But the more I've spent time with them, the more I realize sometimes, you know, an entrepreneur will just hone in on something that if the technology has changed, like you said, from what they were going to do, they'll hone in on some other idea that's related, and they'll just know instinctively to go pursue that idea. And that ends up being the one that makes the company very successful. And so why did they make that decision? It very much comes from the same place, and that's why, you know, using a terminology of clues is something that people, I think, in the spiritual world and in the business world, you know, can agree to use that terminology rather than saying it was a synchronicity.
Yes.
I'll give you a perfect example. There was a venture capitalist a few years back who told us this story, and he said that he was thinking of investing in a company that would allow you to watch video on your phone. Now, this was a few years back, so before the iPhone, really. It was just before that. And he wasn't sure if he should make that investment. So he went to a baseball game that night, and sitting right in front of him, who was way up high up in the stands, was a young boy who was vision impaired and his father. And they were right in his field of sight. And that's when you know, when you have somebody that's in your line of sight, you can't help overhearing something, there might be a clue there for you. And so as they were watching the game, he overheard the boy say to his father, you know, I can't really see what's happening down on the field. And he pulled out his phone and said, I wish I could see, you know, the video here on my phone, right? And that was a confirmation of exactly what the venture capitalist had been thinking about investing in that company. Now, that's an intuition. Okay. So by itself, it's not enough to go make the decision. He still had to go convince his partners, put out the spreadsheets for the projections and tell them why this is a great business. But that process of having the intuition in the right brain and then creating a left brain justification for it, I mean, that's what scientists do and that's what business people do. I mean, if you think of, you know, Einstein and his thought experiment on a beam of light when he was a kid, it took him, what, 20 years before he was able to formulate that into a mathematical theory of relativity that could actually be accepted by other scientists? There are stories and stories in the science world of the same kind of thing, which is also what shamans do. Shamans go into non-ordinary reality.
Right.
They bring back information, whether it's information about where the buffalo are or where to hunt or where to move the tribe to, and then they have to justify it to the village elders.
Yeah. So you're saying to use your career as your treasure map, as your decision-making clues. Look at the past and see what you've done.
That's right, yeah. And I'd say, you know, as we think about our careers and we think about the work that we were meant to do, you know, we start to think about the patterns that we have over time, both positive and negative. And these patterns may evolve over a long period of time. I mean, I'll give you a perfect example with this book, Treasure Hunt. So about 20 years ago, I was doing my first startup, and I was going to write a book about business. Nothing spiritual in it. It was just going to be, you know, here's how you do a startup, right? And, you know, it's pretty difficult as a first-time author to get an agent and find a publisher. And I reached out to this one agent in California, and automatically she said, yeah, that's great. Let's go for it. And I thought, wow, this is great. It says obstacles are melting away, and I'm being pointed in this direction. Well, this is what I refer to in the book sometimes as the green light, red light phenomenon, where there's a green light and you can go for a little while and then things slow down. Yeah. And I think we all experienced this. And what happened in that case was she was unable to sell that book about business to the publishers. But during that process and also I was going out to California the next week and she happened to be out there, so I was able to meet her. So it seemed like the stars were aligning, but then ran into this obstacle where the publishers weren't buying. But during that process, she asked me, well, what's the book you really want to write? Mm. Right? What's the book that you have inside you? And my answer at that point was, I'd really like to write a book about synchronicity and business, right? Because I was starting to become attuned to the clues back then. So now here we are 20 years later, and Treasure Hunt, the book, has just been published. So you can see it's a much larger pattern at work in our lives. And it's okay sometimes if it looks like the clues are pointing us in a direction, but then we slow down.
Now, so you're looking for the moments that are pinnacle moments in your life, the good ones and the bad ones, right?
That's right, yeah. So, you know,
it's not always the good stuff.
Yeah, it's not always the good stuff. And in fact, sometimes, you know, it's a matter of getting the timing right. So one of the rules of treasure hunting in the book is that sometimes a clue will indicate a direction, but not necessarily the timing. So it may say, you know, this is the right way to go, but external circumstances will step in to let you know when the timing is right or wrong. And mm-hmm. and sometimes we think we're getting intuition, but what we're really doing is wishful thinking and repeating our internal patterns.
Mm-hmm. I was going to say that. How do you know that it's really intuition or it's not just the natural sequence of events?
Well, so there's the natural sequence of events, and then there's sometimes, you know, we find ourselves with wishful thinking or we find ourselves doing the same thing again and again. And I call these
right.
our patterns. And usually an external pattern is something that has happened to us in our career, positively or negatively. And then the internal pattern are the decisions and the way we're holding ourselves in order to cause that to happen. And so I'll give you an example. I was on a radio show a few years back where this woman said, well, you know, I keep finding myself in these business relationships that I can't get out of. You know, I've gotten into them, but now they're going sour and I can't get out of them. And I said, oh, that's interesting. So has it happened at least 3 times? She said, yeah. I said, okay, so there's an external pattern in your career that's definitely happened. So now what is the internal pattern that's causing it? And so I asked her to look for I have a terminology for it, which is anti-clues, right? So you're looking for clues and anti-clues. And anti-clues are your internal automatic repetitions that you do without thinking about it that perhaps you shouldn't do. So it's not so much an intuition as just your own tendencies.
You know? Denial, like things like that.
Denial, exactly. So, but in this case, I asked her, you know, how do you feel when you get into these business relationships? And she described a particular sensation. And so as I said, all clues have an internal component and an external component.
Probably wasn't a good sensation.
Yeah. Either on the one hand, there was perhaps a little voice telling her not to get into it, or on the other hand, she actually had a great sensation, which was like, let me rush into this, right? So she was excited about getting in the relationship. And that's okay, except that when it happened again and again without a way to get out of it. So what she needed to do was take a deep breath and say, okay, I'm excited. That's my anti-clue that says when I'm excited, I need to take a deep breath and bring the right brain and left brain together now.
And then form an exit plan.
Exactly. Form a plan. And that way, instead of signing into that contract right away, she could give herself some time to then still get in the business relationships that she wants to get into or should get into, but not jumping into them too quickly.
How do you know which ones to follow? Like, I've had this instinct for – there was a specific memory that comes back into my mind all the time of being in the Pacific Northwest. It was in Seattle. And my daughter was little, and we were in a pumpkin patch. And I still remember the colors and the smells of that beautiful moment.
Well, you know, there's usually some reason for that. So the third rule of treasure hunting is that all clues are very personalized, right? So
yeah.
You and I might walk into the same bookstore or the same party and be completely drawn to
different things.
Different things.
Sure.
Because it depends on, you know, what's important to us internally, you know, and what we value. And so, you know, in the book I talk about the clue life cycle, which is basically a process that you can go through, to try to figure out what the clues mean.
Decode them.
Mm-hmm. And also for people who act too quickly, maybe to slow down. And for people who act too slowly and overanalyze, to take action on the clues. And so the stages of the clue life cycle are the intuition, when you first think you might have a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's interpretation, where you say, this is what the clue might mean to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And that is similar to how you might do a dream interpretation. You might have a symbol in a dream, but you're having a symbol in real life. And then you move to confirmation. So this is where you see if the clue repeats. And the more it repeats, the more important that clue is to you. And it gives you the confirmation to go to the next step, which is action. Right? So you then take some action in the direction that the clue is pointing you in. And then you go through validation and then reflection, where you might get other clues that are related to that clue. And so this is an ongoing process, and it doesn't have to be followed so formally. You know, I'm an engineer, so I like to have, you know, step-by-step procedure, but really
like
it's
that.
More of a circle. And you might, you know, wait for confirmation before you try to interpret it, right? So you don't have to always do it in exactly that. Or you might take a small action and then look for the repetition, right? So there's different ways to go through these stages, but it's kind of a framework for taking what is kind of a loosey-goosey concept, which is follow your intuition, and saying, you know, let's turn it into a treasure hunt. Let's write down what these clues are. Let's figure out how they interrelate to each other, and then over time, what they mean to us. I can tell you another interesting story.
Yeah, I mean, this is great told through stories, because I was going to ask you an example of someone who did this.
Yeah, so, there was a when I was in Boston back in the 90s, I was thinking of coming out to California and trying to live on both coasts. And, you know, I had no money back then. I was in my 20s. So it's not an easy thing to do. And so I was thinking about it and trying to ruminate and figure out whether I should even try to do this. And I was, as I was walking around New England, I started to notice all these mermaids everywhere. And I said, huh, that's odd. No, not real mermaids, but statues of mermaids.
Right. I was hoping. That would have been really cool if they were in a parallel universe.
That's true. They might have been there. And I asked myself, well, why am I noticing these mermaids now? I'd lived in New England for quite a few years, and I'd never noticed them before. Turns out every seafood restaurant has a statue of a mermaid. And so that's where, was it unusual? Yes. Did it repeat? Yes, because I kept seeing them. And then I said, okay, personalize. What does this mean to me? And then as I thought about it, I thought, ah, so a mermaid is somebody who lives in two worlds, right?
Mm.
There's the world of the ocean, and then there's the world of humans, and it's kind of a combination. And for me, that was a clue that I took as confirmation about my decision initially to try to live on the East Coast and the West Coast and to live in two worlds. But over time, it became a much more powerful symbol, because a lot of my work has been about how do we take Eastern concepts and bring them into a Western business setting or a science and engineering setting. And so really I've been living in these two worlds, mm-hmm. of kind of the Western business world and some of these Eastern concepts around meditation, around insight, around energy.
Where were you raised?
So I was born in Pakistan.
Uh-huh.
And moved to the U.S. when I was pretty young. And so I was raised in the Midwest, actually, in Michigan.
Uh-huh. And why did you get into engineering?
Well, I think it's one of those tendencies that I had as a young kid. You know, I'd found myself really drawn to solving math problems, which is not necessarily a popular, you know, activity.
You were good at it.
But I was good at it. And so I think, you know, success in life sometimes comes from finding something that we're good at, something that we like to do, and something that the market needs. And in this, I mean, I wasn't thinking of it in that framework when I was young. I was just, what am I interested in? And I was just following my interests. And I think that's an important part of our big treasure map, is to really follow the interests that keep coming back to us. Because for some of us, we may not have a clear idea. Like, for example, you know, Winston Churchill, when he was a kid, was supposedly said to one of his friends that one day I will be called upon to save the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's a very specific mm-hmm. intuition he had, right?
Right.
But for most of us, we just catch glimpses of what we were meant to do. And I think that's what the treasure map is all about.
And it's great for students also that might not know what they want to do for a, quote, living, because it hasn't been created yet.
Mm.
That's something that – I'm a teenager, so it's a different perspective to say of, you know, everybody asks, well, what do you want to do for, you know, study in college, and what is your major going to be? Most of them don't have any idea.
Right.
And college counselors try to reverse engineer them into personality profiling, testing, and so forth to figure it out. But it's some of the stuff hasn't even on those personality profiles.
It definitely isn't. I'll tell you a great story about that. So there was a young man who was in college in Oregon at Reed College, and he just wasn't happy with any of his classes, so he decided to drop a lot of his classes, and he started to walk around campus. And at the edge of campus, his eye was drawn to this poster about a class on calligraphy. And you know, it was one of those things that just called to him. So it's what I would call a clue. And he was so drawn to this that he decided, okay, I'm going to take this calligraphy class. Forget about, you know, doing these other classes. And in that class, he fell in love with fonts and serifs and,
right.
and design motifs. Well, turns out many years later, you know, that young man whose name was Steve Jobs was creating the Macintosh computer. He insisted that there be multiple fonts, right? Because until then, most personal computers were just green screens.
Right.
And so sometimes taking a departure to something we're interested in actually fits this larger tapestry of our lives. And I think it's an interesting, you know, that story is a good illustration of that, where we might still be typing on green screens today.
So I know my daughter's going to be successful, because she says to me, the teachers are boring. You sit there and you just listen to them talk all day. She gets straight A's, so she figures it out. But she's like, they are so boring to me. She might be in the wrong environment. Okay, let's reverse engineer the pumpkin patch.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
So I have – let's – what is the essence of – pumpkin patch. Let's just follow the clues. Okay.
Well, sure. What does that mean to you? What does a pumpkin patch represent
to you? So I'm drawn to pumpkin patches even in wherever I am. East Coast, West Coast.
Interesting.
I love pumpkin patch.
Okay. That's great.
I don't know why.
Yeah.
Something about the I love the, you know, the color. The pumpkins are beautiful. The piece of the patch is beautiful when the fog settles, so it's usually going to be around fall, mm-hmm. and it settles in the base of the pumpkin patch, so that's a pretty scene. I love fall and the colors of fall. I like the essence of it.
Mm-hmm.
So what could that reverse? You know, I was raised in the Midwest,
okay.
so it could be going back to those memories, those childhood memories.
Yeah.
Pumpkin patches are usually associated with little kids, which is fun.
Yep, and it's Halloween time,
so yeah.
we're seeing lots of pumpkins around right now.
For some reason, it's a very interesting
yeah.
obsession of mine. I love Halloween and pumpkin patches.
Well, let's try the future or parallel universe exercise here.
Yeah, let's try it.
And say, you know, if there was a future you,
right, yes,
that was telling you that this time in pumpkin with the pumpkin patches, either that specific time or sometime in the future, is important to you, why would they want to send you that message?
Mm. It represents simplicity.
There
it represents slowing down.
Yep.
It represents when life was simple.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see there's an essence there.
Yeah.
There's a message there in that clue for you.
It could represent cold weather and hot apple cider and a changing of a season. It could bring in fall after. That's a very significant time when the heat of the summer ends and then the fall begins, which is a transition season.
It's a great time of transition. In mm-hmm. fact, in my first book, Zen Entrepreneurship, I had a whole chapter called Times of Power. And October, the second week of October, was one of those times where you're really sensing a change mm-hmm. and a shift in the world around you. And for me, that often also corresponded to a professional change in terms of where I'd been spending my time.
It's a harvest change. It's a seasonal change. There's a lot that does happen. That's interesting.
Yeah. So you can see that that one symbol, you know, it's what psychologists would call overdetermined when they talk about dream symbols, which means that it can mean multiple things at one at the same time.
So you can interpret your life and your feelings and your hunches just as you can interpret a dream, and you can follow the clues of those. And so do you suggest writing these out?
Yeah, absolutely. So I suggest that, you know, the most important book for clues, of course, you know, there's my book, Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Inner Clues, but the most important book of clues is your own book of clues. And again, I use the example of Indiana Jones. If you have watched Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Indy's father is played by Sean Connery, and Sean Connery has this diary that he calls his Grail Diary. And all throughout his life, he's been writing down clues for how to find the Holy Grail. And so that's a powerful metaphor that, you know, if we have our own Grail Diary, right, we're writing down the clues that are most meaningful to us. And over time, that leads us to our Holy Grail, which is not necessarily the physical Holy Grail that they mm-hmm. were searching for, but really is the treasure, you know, in our lives, which, you know, I define as meaningful work that we're successful at, you know, being in the right place at the right time. And that's really, you know, what this book is all about. It's about finding your passion and finding ways to unlock that passion and to really bring it out into the world.
Something I was talking about earlier about the serial entrepreneur, about having side hustles or multiple jobs and so forth. This applies a lot. Do you see this happening a lot in your circles and people that you speak with, where you teach and so forth?
Yeah. You know, I see it more and more where, you know, people may have a job that they're using to support themselves, but then they have this side project which is more meaningful to them.
Right.
And sometimes, you know, we have to figure out what is the right time to jump into one of those. I'll give you another example, a story from the book. There was a woman in Boston who was doing photography for some of the local newspapers. Mm. But she didn't find it all that satisfying. On the weekends, she was doing wedding photography, and she found that much more meaningful and much more satisfying. And she kept getting this message over time to move back to Austin, which is where she was from, in Texas. Now, Austin, Texas, and Boston are very – Massachusetts are very different places.
Mm-hmm. And you know, they sound the same.
Right. They do. Right. Uh-huh. But as a photographer, it's not that easy to just go and get a job and support yourself in another town. So she was hesitant to do it. And so this was a kind of clue that I call a big clue, which is a direct clue. It doesn't need to be interpreted. She was just getting this message, move back to Austin, move back to Austin. And she ignored it as long as she could. And then finally she jumped in and said, okay, I'm going to go ahead and follow this clue. And she moved back to Austin. And then when she got there, she found an old professor of hers who was able to actually fund her new wedding photography business. And she was it was much more meaningful work for her. So there's a case of, you know, where a side job or hustle turns into an actual full-time business.
Or you pick up the clues. You just reminded me of a friend of mine who I was traveling with, and she had a passion for photography and travel. Those were her two favorite things. Mm-hmm. Yet she was not working in either of those fields. And she happened to pick up the magazine from the front of the seat, and the article was written by a travel photographer. And it was great to see her life, and she wrote like on a day in the life of Paris or something like that. And then we dissected the article, and we talked about what we liked about the article and what we didn't like about the article. And now fast forward 2 years later, she's a travel photographer because she found that clue there. She came being a travel photographer. I mean, so that's an example of following a clue.
Yes, definitely. Okay. So that in that case, the article was the clue. There was an external thing, the article. There was her internal thoughts about wanting to become a photographer and travel. And the fact that article spoke to her so much. And that's important.
She had an opinion about it.
She probably didn't, you know, have that kind of excited talk about every article she read, right?
Mm-hmm. No, but these are how to find the clues in your life.
That's right, yeah. And sometimes, you know, they're obvious and sometimes they're just unusual and you don't know what they're trying to tell you. I'll give you another example. A friend of mine in Arizona was, you know, going to her car one morning and she noticed a seashell. And, well, that's odd. Arizona, she didn't live in near the ocean. Uh-huh. Arizona is in the desert, Phoenix. And then she said, that's odd. And then she looked over and she saw a second seashell. She said, that's really odd. So she picked up the two and she was going to get going. And then she noticed a third seashell, right? And she's like, okay, something weird is going on here, right? And so she took a picture of the three seashells in a row just to remind herself of this clue. And she said, well, what does seashell mean to me? And it turns out she had just very recently seen a movie. It was a movie about taking a pilgrimage. It was called The Way, about the Camino del Santiago in Spain, which was about going there and taking a spiritual pilgrimage. And she wanted to go on that kind of a pilgrimage. And somehow in that movie, she noticed a seashell, right? And so this seashell was in her mind, right? I mean, Jung defined synchronicity as an a-causal connecting principle. You cannot logically say that the seashells in her driveway were related to the seashell that she saw
The movie.
But in her mind, they were connected, and that's the important point.
Oh.
And so then she thought about it some more, and she says, you know, maybe this is telling me I should go on a pilgrimage. But she couldn't afford to really take time to go to Spain. But at the same time, her daughter was going through some difficulties. And so she decided to take her daughter on a pilgrimage to Sedona because of that. And that ended up helping both of them to spend, you know, a few days away on that kind of a spiritual pilgrimage.
So I was going to ask you, because a lot of these stories sound like coincidences, how do you add the quantum physics perspective into it?
Well, so the key is that a synchronicity is a meaningful coincidence, right? And so it's because they're connected in the mind that they have meaning to the person that's perceiving them. It turns out in the quantum physics side, you know, I mentioned all those probable realities that are out there. Well, which one of those comes true? Well, it turns out it's the one that we pay the most conscious attention to. Mm. So consciousness itself is the link between, you know, the objective realities that are out there and this process of going through life. As I said earlier, I call it the synchronicities and clues, the glitches in the quantum matrix, because they show that our minds are really the key part in the middle. There's a great Star Trek episode that kind of illustrates this, which I can share if we have the time. So there's an episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation where the Enterprise goes along and suddenly it encounters a time-traveling spaceship, a former version of the Enterprise from like 100 years ago that was supposed to have been destroyed, let's say, by the Klingons. And so the Enterprise says, well, we don't want them to be destroyed by the Klingons. We have superior technology. Let's save them. So they end up saving them. Now what happens is as soon as that happens, they end up in an alternate timeline. Okay, now they're at war with the Klingons, and everybody has been in this war for over 100 years, really destructive war. Of course, none of them knows this because they're on a parallel timeline. Well, one of the aliens on the ship, who's played by Whoopi Goldberg, Guinan, says, something is off here. I can sense that this isn't the timeline we were on. And at first, nobody believes her, but she senses it, right? Then over time, they start to believe her. They send the old Enterprise back. It gets destroyed by the Klingons as it was supposed to in that timeline, and they end up back on the same timeline that we're all familiar with. But the key is you don't have to be an alien for your mind to sense these different possibilities.
Right.
We all have that power. The conscious mind is actually very important in quantum physics. If you look at the major experiment in quantum physics that people talk about, it's the double slit experiment where they send a photon through either two slits or one slit, and if it goes through two slits, it's like a wave. And if it goes through one, it's a particle that has to go either through A or B. It can't be in both places at the same time. And they said, well, how do you reconcile these? Is it a particle or is it a wave? And the way they reconciled it was they said that the wave is the set of probabilities, all the places the particle can be. But when we decide to observe the specific location of a single particle, that's when the quantum wave collapses into a single reality and the particle ends up in that position. Now, if we think of that not at the level of particles, let's go back to the level of our lives.
Maybe manifestation.
Manifestation, where there are many different possibilities out there. So in quantum physics and in life, the act of observation, which gets back to our minds and what we pay attention to, is what collapses the probability waves. So there are all these probabilities and possibilities out there. The ones we pay attention to the most end up having higher probabilities, and that ends up being the reality that we end up creating or the timeline that we end up on.
Back to the very thing I said about the what you see, you attract, that whole concept around what we've heard this for so long in the metaphysical world is you see things as you want them to be. What persists exists, vice versa.
Yep, that's right. So it does tie very much into that. And I found in manifesting for myself that the most effective images to use to try to guide yourself to are not the ones that I create, but rather the ones that come to me and that I see. It's almost like seeing the future, getting a glimpse of it. And if you can not force it, but you can get a glimpse of what that reality might look like. It's a very subtle distinction between the two.
It's a big distinction, actually. Not the way that you want to see it, but the way that it comes to you.
Yeah, and those images tend to be the ones that are very easy to manifest, and they just kind of happen on their own. I'll give you an example of something that happened to me last year and that I think ties to this idea of receiving or projecting.
Receiving.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I had just sold my last video game company, and I said, what do I want to do next? I wasn't sure, but in the back of my mind, I had the little voice telling me, this is important to pay attention to the little voice. This is one of the types of clues. You know, Steven Spielberg always says, he tells his kids that the little voice whispers from the side. And meanwhile, we have all this noise coming at us from the front, and we have to, you know, ignore the noise to hear the little voice. And so there was this little voice saying, you know, I might want to go back to MIT to do something. And I said, okay, that's an interesting idea, you know, now that I've lived in California and Silicon Valley for 10 years, maybe I should go back. And I said, well, let me go out there and sort of in a left-brained way where a lot of self-help people would say go out and do the things that you need to do to get there. I said, let me go out there and find a position at MIT. And I went on the website and I looked around and I was getting all frantic and I found a position and I applied for it. And, of course, I didn't get it because I was too busy pushing on it. Mm. Meanwhile, within a month, an MIT professor from a totally different department from the MIT Game Lab, which is what I've been working in, reached out to me and said, hey, I'm in San Francisco. Let's meet. I want to talk about games and video games at MIT. And I said, oh, this is an interesting clue. I had just been thinking about doing something at MIT. Mm. Here's an MIT professor that's in an area that I'm in, which is video games, wanting to talk to me. So I had lunch with them, and they said, well, why don't you come in and talk to our students? And I said, sure, but what I'd really like to do is run a startup accelerator where we bring multiple different startups to MIT and we mentor them. And he said, that's a great idea.
And then great idea.
The doors opened up, and even he was surprised that we were able to get it approved so quickly by MIT, and the money showed up. And then this last summer, I ended up running this program called Play Labs, you know, at MIT, where we brought in 12 different playful technology startups. We invested in them. I taught them about entrepreneurship. And now, you know, they've graduated from the program and are out there, you know, as real companies raising money, et cetera.
Really?
But,
wow.
But that's a great example where the doors kind of opened a certain way because I was open to receiving and didn't project exactly, you know, I didn't necessarily need to go to MIT. I needed to set the intention and wait for the clues to come to me and then follow the clues, which led to the path of least resistance to get
there.
Well,
setting the intention is the first piece, though.
That's right. So it is still important to set the intention because with all of these different probabilities out there, you know, which ones are more likely than others? And as you set the intention, you start to weed out some of the ones maybe that weren't meant to be.
You know? Do you use vision boards or you just have thought process? What do you use for your setting your intentions?
I don't actually use vision boards. I just do a small thing where I just write down, you know, my intention, what I want in my iPhone.
Write it down.
And, you know, I think today, you know, there's a lot we can do with apps that hasn't been done. And then I let it go. That's actually part of the important aspect of it because sometimes it's true in sales, in relationships, and in business. If you're pushing too hard and you're too eager, other people sense that as well, and that pushes away sometimes the exact thing you're trying to attract. It's kind of like in a relationship. If somebody is too eager and pushing too hard, that can actually push the other person away.
It sure can, yeah.
Yeah. And so that's why I put an emphasis on setting the intention but then receiving and following the clues to navigate to the reality. And then after that, if I get an image that comes to me spontaneously in a meditation, that's when I know I've caught a glimpse of the future. There's the glitch in the matrix there.
Cool. I love it. Play Labs. So these 12 startups and so forth that you have, you're doing something similar with the book, right?
Yeah, that's right. So with Play Labs, it was an accelerator. We invested in 10 companies. We'd invest $20,000 in each company and then do more later. Now, that tends to be primarily the types of companies that venture capitalists would invest in. So with the launch of the book, I'm launching what I call the real life treasure hunt, Follow Your Dreams. And the idea is to allow for people who have more spiritually or conscious oriented business ideas or projects that they want to pursue, and for me to help them. And so, you know, on my website at zenentrepreneur.com, I have a lot more information on the contest. You can think of it kind of like a Shark Tank, but without the sharks.
Right? Yeah.
It's more of a spiritually minded competition. And because I know what it's like to have an idea but to not have anybody support you. And so I'll be investing $20,000 into at least one idea. But probably more than that, I'll be helping out, you know, the finalists and figuring out how do they take this concept they might have and bring it into reality. And I'll give you an example of a project that I ended up helping out. And so this project is called Pure Light Audio. And the creator of that, Ellen McDonough, she had gone through some healing challenges, and Western medicine wasn't helping. And she found these different energetic healers out there who had created these audios that were encoded with healing energy. And there's a bunch of them out there.
You know,
Michelle Carter, Christine Day, many, many. And so they had been a part of her healing journey. And she said, well, I really want to create an app for these types of audios because they're not available on iTunes. You have to, like, go find different telesummits.
Right.
You have to find websites. So she ended up saying, I'd like to create this app. And I said, okay, let me see if I can help you build that app. And so I helped her get that app. And now it's out there. It's called Pure Light Audio. And, you know, sometimes you need a little bit of money, but more than that, you need a little bit of guidance to help kick things off. So those are the types of projects where people are following their clues in their own lives as opposed to – hey, you know, the next big tech thing is AI. I want to do an AI startup. There's plenty of venture capitalists in Silicon Valley who you can talk to, and they might invest you, they might not. But these types of more meaningful projects are much harder to find backers for, I feel.
And that's right. I wonder why. Because they have the best stories behind them. Meaning.
They do, right? Yeah. They have the best stories and they have the best meaning. And you know, meaningful work is really what this book and what our treasure hunt is all about, you know. So it's not just about the financial returns in this case. It's finding worthwhile projects and picking at least one of those to help bring into reality.
So that's zenentrepreneur.com.
That's right. Yep.
And they submit an application or?
Yeah, they submit an application where they kind of describe you know, what their project idea is. And, of course, I have to ask the normal investor questions. Okay, who is this product for, mm-hmm. right? How will people find out about it? What's your plan? So, you know, many people might have an idea, but they may not have yet developed a pitch deck or an idea. And so the questions kind of walk you through, you know, how you would go about that process. And mm-hmm. so it's open to anyone who buys a copy of the book. Mm-hmm. Got to keep the publisher happy.
Right,
Treasure
so
Hunt.
You can get that on Amazon, right?
Yep, you can get it on Amazon. It was just released a few days ago, actually.
And it's once you get the copy, you send in a receipt or something?
You can send in a receipt. You can take mm-hmm. a picture of yourself with the book on social media. There's different ways you can show that you have a copy. Or you can tell which case study is your favorite. There's like 44 different case studies.
And, wow.
And the reason for that is I want to see why is that case study important to you and how are you following your own clues in your life for this project. It's not just a random project you thought of to make some money. There has to be some calling there, right? There has to
right.
be some clues for you to say you should go down this path.
Now, does it matter what age people are? I mean, I know that there tends to be a lot of buzz around the younger generation or millennials starting up companies. Does it matter?
Not for this, for the real-life treasure hunt. They could really be any age. Mm-hmm. You're never too old or too young to be called to
have an idea.
To have an idea, exactly.
Yeah.
But it's more about, you know, have you had enough clues that you should do this and that this is the right timing, because it's possible it's something you should do but the timing isn't right. And so we need to delve into that. And so once we pick the finalists, then I'll get into a lot more details with them.
I see that you've annotated your own book, which is so great. Why is it that are these the stories that you specifically love?
Yeah, they're either stories that, you know, were calling to me at the time, or they're specific quotes that I might, you know, want to remember or call upon. And so, yeah, it is kind of funny that I've annotated my own book.
I love it. No, I love it because there's certain parts that you really love. This is a book you wrote on your own, or did you have collaborators with it?
No, I wrote it on my own.
That's
and as
great.
I said, I wrote it over many years and
yeah,
going all the way
like
back
it.
To the 90s. And so it's
wow.
exciting to get it done.
I really like the emphasis on the quantum physics because that really brings in a different perspective of these parallel universes where you actually can call in that future self mm-hmm. or one that can be happening side by side.
Yeah.
Ever since I had that near-death experience, I have believed that you can operate simultaneously in various directions.
Oh, that's interesting. And you may have seen some of that, right?
Yeah. Well, I did yeah. a whole summit on yeah. on the afterlife.
Okay.
And unequivocally, the people that I interviewed, 20 or 30 different experts, scientists, and all sorts of different perspectives, but they all said the same thing, that there is an afterlife, that there is
right.
a community. And it came from every different perspective, people that were in hospice, that helped shared crossings, helped people cross over, people that had different psychological backgrounds, institutions, professors. And they said there is an existence of life after life, because of the clues that have been sent back to this current realm and this current reality. Mm. And that was one of my favorite summits because I had so many different perspectives on the same topic all coming up with the same result. Mm. And so it made me really think, well, gosh, if there's not limited to one, why would the universe say, oh, there's only going to be one after? There's going to be an afterlife, but there's just going to be one.
That's great. Yeah, and, you know, as I looked into it, because I work with a lot of skeptical people.
I'm sure.
In the science and engineering world.
Yes.
And in the business world, maybe not skeptical, but more left-brained, let's put it that way. But, you know,
That's the bottom line on that.
Mm-hmm. And, I found that as you looked at even the spiritual traditions or the hypnotic regression, like Michael Newton in Journey of Souls
right.
and Brian Weiss in Many Lives, Many Masters, they both found when they regressed to before birth that there was a period just before birth where you're laying out the possibilities and the clues that you're supposed to look for. They call them little signs. It could be the laugh of a person that you were meant to be with, or it could be a necklace they're wearing, or it could be something to remind you. And now why do we need the clues? Well, in like the ancient Chinese traditions, there's the goddess Meng Po, the goddess of forgetfulness, who gives us the soup of forgetfulness, and we drink it before we cross over, so we don't remember what happened there. All we have left are the clues, the little hunches, the feelings of deja vu, the things that come to us in dreams that are there to remind us, you know, of whatever that treasure map was. You know, that we had set it up. Now, some people who have had near-death experiences might know yeah. and remember that. Yeah.
Do you have a clues journal?
Yeah, you know, I do. I keep track of clues. Like, I sometimes write down my dreams, but I kind of combine the two between dreams and clues that I see.
Do you have an app for that?
I've been thinking about creating an app to make it easier.
A clues app. Yep. That's interesting. If you can track the synchronicities that happen. I love interviewing people that they come on and they say, you know, I had this horrible, devastating, rock bottom experience, and it's exactly what needed to happen in order for me to get to this place. And this could be a cancer survivor or someone who's gone through a severe bankruptcy or a healing crisis. And they always say that, you know, I never could have seen that that's what needed to happen to get me here now, right? Mm-hmm. During that time of the crisis, of the healing crisis or the financial or whatever, the last thing we're going to say is, this is happening so that I can have massive success in a year.
Right. You know, it doesn't seem like that.
Horrific right? time in my life, so just so I could be really successful. That never crosses our minds, and it would be really good to document.
Yeah, I agree with you. It doesn't, but usually yeah. those end up being the experiences that open new doors that take us in a different direction.
Yeah. I don't know how quantum that is, because it's just simply growth.
Sure, it is growth, but then the question is, you know, would that growth have happened without that devastating experience?
I mean, sometimes we create it.
Create the devastating experience to help us, yeah, to help us get there, right?
Yep.
And so it gets back to, you know, somebody asked me on a show the other day, like, do you think we pretty much end up where we were meant to be, you know, no matter what? And I said, well, I think we end up in one of the places we were meant to be, because I feel like there are choices that we make and there are potentially different realities, some of which diverge and some of which merge back together.
How would you ever know the answer to that question?
You know, it's all in the mind, according to quantum physics.
Exactly.
And consciousness.
You could just go round and round and round. We could keep going for another 2 hours on the same topic. Okay, the name of the book is called Treasure Hunt, and it's Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. You can find it on Amazon. And I noticed that Daniel Brinkley endorsed your book, and he's a big believer in quantum physics. He had how many near-death experiences through being struck by lightning?
Yeah, I think he had at least three times that he died.
Yeah, so he is really one to know of different paths in life that he could have chosen for sure.
And in his case, you know, he came back with some specific things he was supposed to do, like build these stress relief centers, and they kind of told him his mission. And, you know, Danyan was hosting a panel for the launch of my book. And so, you know, he's a big proponent of the quantum physics side of this as well as the spiritual side of it, because, you know, he's had to argue with a lot of the scientists, as perhaps you have as well. Yeah,
he wrote all about it in his book, and then it came to fruition several years later. So he had evidence.
Yeah.
So anyway, thank you so much. Rizwan Virk, or Riz Virk, is the name of my guest, and the name of the book is called Treasure Hunt, Follow Your Inner Clues to Find True Success. And we might think of them as synchronicities, but these are really, as Riz said, synchronicities are meaningful coincidences linked by consciousness. Who said that?
Jung, who defined synchronicity in the first place.
Yes, very good. All right, thanks for such an entertaining hour. I appreciate it. And thank you all so much for listening and being a part of this quantum conversation. I'm Lisa Garr, and thank you to Gina Salvati, executive producer of the show, and Joyce Walker, producer of the show. And thank you for listening. Your energy in these shows and your energy exchange is what makes them happen. Until next time, I invite you to stay aware.